Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. I'm John Schmelk. This guy to my left is Paul Dottino, and the phone number for you is 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants Chat if you want to get in on the conversation on Twitter. Obviously, we're only 2 days. Today's Thursday, right? 2 days off from the Giants' third preseason game against the New York Jets. Folks, you have to learn something. When you're at training camp in August, the days cease to matter, especially when you have a preseason game on a Monday night and it felt like it should have been a Saturday or Sunday. It throws off your whole week. I've been a day behind all week. So anyway, we're only 2 days away from the Giants' quote-unquote dress rehearsal game. The coaches don't like when you say that, but you will see the starters probably for upwards of two-plus quarters. You'll probably see them play into the second half. They like to simulate that halftime turnaround for Eli Manning.
Yes.
So he'll probably get a couple snaps, maybe one series or so in the third quarter. So you see the starters out there for a little more. And I guess that's where we'll start, Paul. And where I want to go with this is quite simply, how hurt is this team in being able to evaluate where they are offensively? Because right now that is the big question based on what we've seen in the first two preseason games.
Okay.
How much does it hurt that ability to evaluate where you're at based on the fact that your three starting wide receivers aren't there, your two starting wide receivers aren't there, and you're also missing Tavarius King. So you're going to have Sterling Shepard, Roger Lewis, Travis Rudolph, and then, frankly, a bunch of guys that have been here for less than a week.
Well, Jeremy Lane.
Correct. I forgot about him. Good call. How much does that hurt your ability to evaluate where the offense is at? I mean, it's got to make it more difficult, no?
Well, I would only say this, John. Your starting five offensive linemen are still going to be on the field for the first two quarters, and as you said, maybe longer.
That's true.
And
you might get a full three quarters out of your starting offensive line in this game.
You may. And that's really, in my opinion, what needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think the receivers are a question. And I think we know enough about Beckham and Marshall and even Tavarius King to know that Eli can find those guys if he has to and hit them with the appropriate passes that he needs to throw. What we don't know right now is where is this offensive line stand? Where does this running game stand? Because they are works in progress. And that's admitted by the linemen themselves who came out and talked to us. Weston Richburg spoke yesterday. Was it the day before? And said, it's a work in progress.
Right.
We're trying to get this thing right. We're trying to get to where we want to be. We're not there yet. Well, okay, guess what, guys? The starting five are going to have another chance to go out there and continue that work in progress. So in my mind, I guess I'm not as upset about the injuries to the receivers as maybe some people would be, because I think that the stuff that needs to get worked on is going to have a chance to get worked on.
I understand what you're saying, but I do think it's also fair to say this passing game, even when the offensive line has protected in the passing, let's be honest, it's not like Eli Manning's been under siege or was under siege in the quarter mm-hmm. he was in the game on Monday night. The team still couldn't score. So I would like to see this team, regardless of evaluating individual positions, and given how much they struggled last year scoring points, put together one really nice drive on Saturday night and show that they can consistently move the ball, whether it's on the ground, through the air, with the offensive line, or whatever. I want to see them come together and actually do it. Now, if they don't, am I going to be in a full-fledged panic that, oh, no, we're in so much trouble? No, because they could turn things around in the first regular season game and be great. That's certainly possible. Not saying it's not. But for confidence sake, for people that follow the team, cover the team, and for the players and coaches themselves, I think there is a value to having that first-team offense go out there and put together one or two really nice drives against the Jets. And I feel like with Beckham and Marshall out, their ability to do that gets hurt. That's
yeah,
my point.
That's fair. It's fair. I would not argue against that. I think there's some validity to that. I don't know that I would put as much value in it maybe as you are, but I think it's certainly valid. To me, you know, I'm still thinking that besides the offensive line / running game situation mm-hmm. that they are working on, you also have to continue sorting through the number two quarterback situation.
Yeah.
And that maybe goes a little bit more to your point, because you need to get some drives going with whoever that second string quarterback is going to be so that you can decide if he is the guy. So maybe that kind of ties in more to your point.
Yeah, because if you, once you get to the third or second group of wide receivers, now you're looking at the Egans, the Germanys, the Severins, and I can't remember in the name of the fourth guy that they brought in, who's basically been here a week. I mean, these guys, you can study all you want. You're not going to have much of a clue of what you're doing after just a couple of practices.
No, so, you know, maybe, just maybe, some of those second-level receivers that we're talking about might even play a little bit longer because the back end of the wide receiver depth chart right now is so full of newbies and unproven guys that you could make an argument it's probably unfair to the second-string quarterback battle competitors to be throwing to fellas who probably know, what, a small percentage of the routes?
Well, let me ask this then, too. Let me build on that. Let's say Eli Manning plays 2.5 quarters, just for, let's say in theory. He plays until like 8 minutes to go in the third quarter, okay?
Okay.
How many other quarterbacks do you think Ben McAdoo plays in this game?
I don't think he can play more than two, then.
I mean, do you even get to two? Josh Johnson got so little run in that game on Monday night. Do you give him a full quarter and a half? It's tough.
I would actually argue, because the backup quarterback situation is so muddled right now, I don't want to say argue, but I would strongly consider not even giving Eli into the third quarter.
Or maybe do you do this? Do you hold the battle on that second quarterback spot into the fourth preseason game, play just Eli and Webb in preseason game number three, and then just split first half, second half with Smith and Johnson in preseason game number four?
Certainly an option. I would not argue against that. It definitely would be an option for me.
I think that's a tough balancing act, to be honest with you, because I think you definitely want to get Davis Webb another quarter before the preseason is done, if not a little bit more. In my opinion, I also don't think you have that backup quarterback situation settled. Before the preseason and training camp started, I would have liked after game two to have at least a very strong leader in the clubhouse in my mind. I'm not sure, based on the performance, we're there at this point, and I still think there's some work to do there.
I'm going to make a bold statement here. I think if Coach McAdoo goes the way you just said and gives Webb the backup reps behind Eli in game three and holds off on the other two guys into game four, I think that's a strong sign that Coach is leaning towards actually going with Webb as his number two.
I see. I don't know if that's necessarily true, though.
Provided he does well.
Okay.
He comes in and they go that way and he plays well against the Jets, I think he might just steal that number two spot. And I think it's more likely that he could do that if that scenario plays out.
I would still be surprised by it, to be honest with you.
It's a reach.
Yeah.
But until one of those other veterans slams the door on him, he's in play.
I would not consider it out of the realm of possibility, though, either. Couple other things I want to touch on, too, Paul. Yesterday we saw Brett Jones, I think for the first time in camp, get some run with the ones.
Yes.
And not at center. They had him over at right guard instead of John Jerry.
Yeah, and he's a real excited kid. I love Brett
Jones.
He's
a really nice guy.
One of the nicest guys you'd ever want to meet in an NFL locker room. You know, you think about his story, being an all-CFL center, you know, and then the Giants wind up importing him south of the border, and his first year spends on IR. And I'm sure a lot of people are thinking, well, you know, what was this?
He's a stash guy.
Experiment, you know, and what are you going to get out of him? Well, lo and behold, last year he proved to be the most important reserve on that entire offensive line.
The question is, against NFL starters, can he overcome his lack of size? Because he's the smallest offensive lineman I've ever seen on this roster.
Yeah, but his fight,
yep.
His smarts,
yep.
His willingness to do anything.
His technique.
It's all good. He checks every box.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's easy to understand why the coaches love him. And it's also easy to understand why he was so happy about getting those first some. It was only a small handful of first-team reps. It wasn't a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It was only a handful. And even Coach McAdoo just said, hey, he's worked his behind off. He does really good things. We wanted to give him a chance to get a few looks with the first team. Even Coach did not signify anything major by that other than to just give him a few shots.
But I thought it was interesting that he got a few shots and, say, DJ Fluker didn't.
And that's surprising to me, if only because the day before in the conference call, McAdoo praised Jones and Fluker equally.
He did.
Well, equally.
Maybe we'll see Fluker today.
And that's what I was just going to say. Maybe yesterday was Jones' shot and DJ Fluker's shot is today, and then we'll see what happens in the game.
Because I know we'll get a lot of calls on this, and we'll get to your calls in a second at 201-939-4513, and we'll get more into the offensive line when I'm sure we get the calls on it. But I will say this. I wouldn't mind seeing in this third preseason game a couple of different combinations if you want to try it. Like, if you want to throw Fluker out there and see if that helps the running game a little bit inside, I'd be okay with it. If you want to throw Jones out there and see if that helps the running game somehow. You wouldn't think based on the physics of it, but who knows? Give it a shot. I wouldn't have a problem with that either, just to kind of mix things up and see how it goes. Based on the fact that there was simply too much interior penetration in those first two preseason games, this is your last chance to really, I guess you could do in the fourth preseason game, but this is one of your last chances to really try something different. I wouldn't have a huge problem if they wanted to mix things up a little bit in this game.
Well, I will say this, John. You know, Coach McAdoo has told us several times he wants to play this preseason as he did last year. So the assumption is that most of his starters will not play against the Patriots in game number four.
Did he end up playing in the fourth game last year?
No.
He did not?
No.
Okay.
I would say to you this. I would put money on the entire starting offensive line playing probably a quarter against the Patriots in that fourth preseason game.
Yeah, but they have to.
They're not ready yet.
Right, and there's only X number of offensive linemen on the team. So you're going to have to – that's one of the groups where you have to play some of your starters. You have no choice. But I agree. I think, though, we should wait until we see what happens on Saturday before we make that proclamation. If they're great and dominant this week, maybe you can take a little bit of a break there. Maybe.
I don't know that I would,
okay,
if it were me.
All right, final point we should make is that Valentino Blake got put on the reserve, the left squad list, which basically means that he's not here, and the Giants can fill his roster spot, but they do own his rights, and he cannot sign with another team, to make it as simple as possible. And there's really no other information besides that.
He's a mystery player right now.
Yes. All right. Change his name, and now he's trying to go incognito.
Okay. Well, then he better dye his hair all one color, yes, because then nobody would recognize him.
All right, let's do it. 201-939-4513. Already a full bank of calls. Let's get to your calls, and we'll take them for the next 45 minutes until we wrap up the show at 11 o'clock. John Schmuck, Paul Dottino, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Bobby in Washington will lead us off. Bobby, is that Washington West Coast or Washington Nation's capital?
East Coast.
Okay, gotcha.
Washington, D.C., yes.
I was going to say, because if you're on the West Coast, you're up a little bit early, my friend.
No. John, Paul, appreciate the opportunity.
I
thank you for the show.
Thank you.
I have to hit on some points. I'm still up that offensive line because that's another story. That's another story right there. But I got to go into what you guys talked about yesterday because I didn't get the chance to call in.
Sure.
Just real quick point. I truly believe that the hit on Odell was a dirty play. I understand it wasn't a legal hit, but it was a dirty play. And that's the same reason why Brandon Medweather is not in the league anymore, because spearing is not taught in the NFL. I don't know who teaches that style of tackle. And if they ever taught that in Little League and college, there'll be no one for the NFL because everyone will be crippled.
Bobby, I'll be honest with you. I wasn't on the show yesterday, so I haven't had to state my opinion on this. To me, if you start making hits below the hips illegal and hits above the shoulder pads illegal, I don't know how defensive players are going to be able to tackle anybody.
No. I'm not saying illegal necessarily throw a flag, but he was defenseless, and he was in the air.
So what do you want the defender to do?
Attack the ball.
He got there too late to attack the ball.
They teach the tackle through the player, not to set him up and undercut him. I don't know, and launch yourself the way he did. If Odell would have saw him coming, he could have easily hopped over him, you know what I'm saying, like just hopped over him. But because he didn't try to grab his legs or anything, he just speared him.
Now, Bobby, anyway, I hear you, but I will say this too, and a number of defensive players in the Giants were asked about this. I know Landon Collins was not happy with the hit, but including the Ben McAdoo, the head coach, by the way, a lot of people have just said, look, it's football. In football, you're going to get hit.
No. Taunch the shield and say it was a dirty hit. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is what it is. But, I mean, there's just another point. Josh Norman did say earlier this year that, you know, penalties will be coming, suspensions will be coming, because DBs will be targeting Beckham. But that it is what it is.
I hear you.
I'm hoping that you know, we see a little bit more Goldman. I like the little sample size we saw, you know, of him. You know, he had a little juice, a little spark. Still don't like Perkins. I don't know what they see in him. You know, Paul, I confidently tell you that I don't like the sample size what I've seen of him.
Well, Bobby, I will say this real quick. I will say this real quick, Bobby. Wayne Goldman's got to hold on to the football because he had.
Well, you know what?
That's
another thing. The quick question: they never really said who fault that was. It was Josh Johnson handing the ball off, or what it was. They never said who fault that was.
I personally did not like the what I considered to be a fumble by Goldman, and then he had a drop pass as well.
And then, quite frankly, he had a couple moments in practice last week, Bobby, where on two out of three or two out of four snaps with Geno Smith, they fumbled exchanges, and Ben McAdoo made both guys run a lap around the practice
field.
I'm aware of that,
but that doesn't tell us who fault it is by making both a run. I mean, I know Eli even fumbled the ball, and he – you know, push Eli to the side.
Okay,
I'm not saying it wasn't good, but he didn't play the first game either.
Yeah, but
so that was his first time out.
If Coach made both guys run the lap, then he's telling you he's blaming both.
Right, exactly. And the fact that it's becoming a pattern.
I would like to know who fought it was. They said it may be the option play because it didn't look like he even grabbed the ball. It didn't look like he even went after the ball.
Well, we'll see if we can track that down for you. But the bottom line is you can't be putting the ball on the ground.
Especially as a rookie.
And he did drop a very easy pass right in his hands also. And
that's not good. Yeah, he did. I kind of, it's a terrible situation. But, I mean, other than that, you know, he's still young.
Of course he is.
You know, people drop the ball. I think that Brandon Marshall should have caught the ball. And also the flag on Marshall should not have been picked up. Because it was a helmet-to-helmet hit.
I thought it was shoulder-to-shoulder pad.
No, it hit his helmet. Helmet-to-helmet hit. The shoulders hit, of course, but the helmet hit, too.
I thought the helmets did hit. But
yeah, the helmets hit.
On the replays I saw in the booth, I thought it was a legal hit. I can go back and look at it again. Yeah. But from what I saw up in the booth, I thought it was a legal hit.
It was more so defensive player. That's what they call. That's what the initial call was.
I think
he's reaching out for the ball, and it got him go for the ball, just go for the hit.
No, but Bobby, you have to understand that I think people are losing sight of this. You can hit a defenseless player. You just can't hit a defenseless player a certain way. Mm-hmm. You can hit a defenseless player with your shoulder into their chest as hard as you want. You can destroy them if you hit them in the chest with your shoulder. It's when you start using your helmet
that, your
as a weapon.
Should be up. Your head shouldn't be down, so you shouldn't get
the
helmet.
I'm telling you what the rule is. If you hit a guy in the shoulder, in the chest with your shoulder pad, as long as you're not hitting the guy with your helmet, it's a legal hit.
Yeah.
Period. Stop. Over.
I did think the helmets did click at some point.
Okay. I do think there was contact.
And if there was, then that would be a legitimate penalty. I would have to look at it again to make sure that there was, you know, impactful helmet to helmet contact.
I appreciate the call.
Thanks, Bobby.
See you next time. All right.
Appreciate it. Good stuff, Bobby. Good to hear from you.
You know, the one interesting point that he does raise, though, about the running backs. You know, the two things you can't do as a running back is put the ball on the ground and blow pass protection. You do either one of those, you're on the bench. I mean, that's just football 101.
And I have not heard, in fact, we haven't had a chance to talk to the assistant coaches, unfortunately, this training camp. And that's one of the things I love to ask Craig Johnson is who's doing well in pass protection. So I haven't had the chance to do that. And I haven't really even run into him in the hallway much either, to be honest with you. But I'm not honestly sure where Goldman is on his pass protection, to be honest with you.
No, because I haven't seen him asked to do it very
much. Right, exactly.
So, you know, it's a hard thing to evaluate. But just understand, you know, you could say, hey, Goldman had some nice runs. He looked like he was quick. He looked like he was explosive. It looked like he had moves. You could say everything you want about three or four other runs that he had when he had a drive moving. But put the ball on the ground, that kind of undoes a lot.
And I think if Perkins had the room Goldman had on those runs, he would have had just as much success.
You'd want to believe that.
Right. I believe he would have.
Now, remember, I did look this up yesterday, and you said you were watching the show. Goldman only had 5 total fumbles at Clemson, so he did not have bad hands.
And he had a lot of touches at Clemson, too. So
he did. Mm-hmm. I mean, 17 rushing touchdowns last season. So this is not a guy who's coming into the pros with fumbleitis. So I'm inclined to think he just had a rough night.
Okay, fair point. Let's go to Ahmad in New Hyde Park on line two. Ahmad, what's going on, pal?
Hey, how's it going, John? How's it going, P-Dot?
Hi, great, Ahmad. How are you?
Good, good. John, I want to first of all congratulate you.
Thank you.
And P-Dot, I saw you in one of the training camps. You were much taller than I expected. I was saying, hey, P-Dot, and then you waved back. In case Brandon Marshall can't start for week one, we can probably sub you in, right?
Well, see, Ahmad, here's the thing. Paul makes sure he's always standing next to Lance, so he looks much, much taller.
It really does make quite a difference. I'm only 6'1", just for the record. But, you know, it's funny. The fans have been great, and I really, you know, it's always good to see him. And I thought this year, and I did not see the attendance, John, have been the most attended Giants training camp since they've moved it back home.
I wouldn't be surprised.
You know, fans were really good this year.
Now, one thing that I'm going to say is you guys are probably not going to like is you guys were referring to it back 10 minutes ago. I don't think we do need Geno or Josh Johnson as our backup just because of the fact that if you guys think that, God forbid, Eli goes down, I really don't think that any of those two guys can win us a regular season game. And I think might as well stick with Webb. Hope that Eli stays the Iron Man that he is and open up a roster spot for maybe a fullback like Shane Smith or Travis Rudolph, who are just in the edge of making the team or not making the team. What do you guys think about that?
If that's the case, Ahmad, I need to see Davis Webb play more. I mean, quite frankly, he has not gotten a lot of reps even in practice with second-teamers. He has not gotten a lot in games with second-teamers. If they were going to give
–
and look, if they decide – what you said is true, and I'm not saying it's outside the realm of possibility, though Geno Smith has won some games in the NFL. He has.
Yes, he has.
They need to give Davis Webb more opportunities to work with these guys in practice over the next, three practices before the season starts? I mean, there aren't many. I mean, you have to understand, during training camp, he does not take snaps in team or 7-on-7 period until he gets to the final 15 minutes of practice, and then he's basically playing quarterback with a bunch of undrafted rookie free agents and Mark Herzlick at tight end. If they're going to trust him to be the backup quarterback, I got to see significant time on the field in one of these next two preseason games for him to prove that he can do it. Until the coaching staff puts him in that situation, I'm not going to believe that they're going to name him the number two, in my opinion.
Which is why I want to see what he gets, if anything, against the Jets in week three.
And that's
because
fair.
That would lean me into that direction, potentially.
Sure.
Yeah, and I would like to see Wayne Gallman get more carries in the regular season. And the last thing I want to say is a fun fact for all the fans listening. A lot of fans don't know, Tom Brady and Ben McAdoo are the same age. And with
that's
that
a good
said,
one.
I'm going to take my call off the line. Thank you for taking my call.
Thanks,
take
Ahmad.
Care, guys.
That's actually a very interesting nugget. I didn't know that. That's funny.
I can't say that I've ever thought about it.
No. I just think it's an interesting factoid.
I suppose so.
I'm surprised. I thought Gallman was fine. People really think he lit the world on fire in that game? I thought he was okay. I wasn't blown away.
I think what's happening here is
people are just so mad that the first team can't run the ball.
There's a lot of frustration over the disappointing running game so far. I think everybody's just grabbing at whatever straws they can to say, let's change something.
If you had Wayne Gallman in there and he got the run blocking that Paul Perkins got in the first quarter, guess what? He wouldn't have gained any yards either.
Doubtful. Doubtful. I mean, look, folks, here's the bottom line, and I think every single one of the linemen have said it at one time or another in the last month. If there's one thing out of sync, one block that's missed, one mistake that's made, the running play blows up.
And what Pugh said to me after the game, and I've heard this before, so I'll take it with a big grain of salt. You know, we're blocking a lot better in practice. We're running the ball well in practice. It's not just translating it from the practice field to the game. Well, I've heard that a million times before, and sometimes, guess what? That never actually does happen, but take that for whatever it's worth.
We should add one other thing in the take it for what it's worth bin.
Mm-hmm.
We did hear from Richburg tell us that the Giants offensive linemen had no mental mistakes in the Cleveland game.
There's a lot of physical ones.
Yeah, well, but
right.
They will tell you when they go back and they look at the film, a mental mistake
right. Is
always more painful, more critical, and there's a higher penalty than there is for physical mistakes right. in the coach's eyes.
And by the way, I want to point this out, too. I looked at the game tape on a lot of the running plays in the first half. Not all of them, but some of them. And it wasn't all the offensive line, either. There was one play where Paul Perkins could have had a big run. Evan Engram trips over, I think, Bobby Hart's back leg, falls down. Then Perkins can't get through the hole.
Yep.
There was another play when Tavares King did not block his cornerback. The cornerback came into the backfield and blew up a running play for a loss. There was another play where the slot receiver didn't get to the safety. The safety got into the hole and caused a run for a loss. So there's plenty of blame to go around here. It's not just the offensive line. And by the way, the running backs could do a better job, too. It's a team effort, folks. So it's not just the O-line.
Coach was very clear about that. It takes all 11 to make a running play work.
Correct. Correct. So. I just wanted to make sure we get that out there. Let's go to Joey. He's also in Washington, D.C. Hey, Joey. How are you?
Hey, guys. Yeah, you're in enemy territory.
Hi.
I've been hearing so much about the problems of the offensive line over the past, several months, actually the last year.
So have we.
I feel like there's a lot of unfair criticism that's falling on the offensive line, and a lot of it falling on Eric Flowers in particular. And everybody wants their offensive line to get better. And I'm not saying that we've got five Pro Bowlers there. But as I look at it, and I want to get your thoughts on what you think of this, as I look back at the past couple of seasons, in Flowers' first season, the left side of the line is essentially the same as the second season. He was a rookie. He was playing hurt the entire year for the most part, and he did an admirable job. And the Giants on offense averaged something like 27 points per game, which put them towards the top of the league.
Yeah.
In the second year, you had a big drop-off, even though the personnel was basically the same on that side of the line. And so I asked myself, what's the big difference there? And I think one of the key differences from that first Eric Flowers year to the second is not so much in his play, but in the situation around him. You look at what changed with the wide receiver core. I love Victor Cruz. I'll defend him to death. But the reality is he's the body type for a slot player. And when you put a slot player on the outside, the matchups are just not going to give you the kind of space that you would when you have that bigger body on the outside. And Reuben Randall, for all his faults and all his inconsistency, at least provided that threat of a bigger body wide receiver that forced defenses to take that into account.
Yes, sir.
The next thing that changed that was so frustrating is we were unable to run, but we also did not show a commitment to the run, not just in the plays that we call, but also the personnel that we put on the field. We didn't have a fullback. So we put out a three wide receiver spread on most of our plays, telegraphing what we were going to do often to a defense that said, all right, we're going to sit back with two safeties high, and if your offensive line is going to hold up until that play develops, good luck to you.
Yeah.
And I think we really put our offensive line in a very, very difficult position last year, and I think the changes that we made this year to the roster might help them out a lot.
Please don't forget to mention the injury loss of Shane Vereen, which to me was a huge factor in that offensive situation last season.
Thanks for the call, Joey. We appreciate it. Your phone line dropping out a little bit there. Yeah. It doesn't sound real good, so I'm going to let you go. But I think you made some good points, and I do think I'm going to try to bring up a document here if I can find it that I did back in January, February when I hosted a show with Feagles.
Okay.
But it still is a little bit of a mystery why there was such a drop-off. And I don't want to, go back and do revisionist history because I don't think it's very interesting. We've talked about it so many times before. Why there was such a drop-off in productivity from 2015 to 2016. And I do think that there is some legitimate questions as to why there was such a drop-off from one year to the next. I don't think we have a full accounting of that quite.
I think his 2 points plus the Vereen point, those three together are certainly going to throw a huge dent into an offense's armor. I don't think there's any doubt. Now, was it worth, a full touchdown, a game? I don't necessarily know that, but I do know these were big, big factors we're talking about.
That's
for sure.
Yeah, I don't see this document here that I did. I did a whole statistical breakdown. I don't see
it. And actually, let's throw in less production from the tight end position, too. How about make that a fourth reason why the offense did not produce? I mean, how many more do we need? That's four right there that we've just given you.
Wait, what were the four? Give me them again.
He was talking about, well, I mentioned Vereen.
Right.
I mentioned the tight end production. He mentioned Victor Cruz being out of position because he should have been a slot guy, but now he's playing outside.
Even so, I mean, you're going from Ruben Randle to Victor Cruz. I'm not, I can't legitimately say that's a huge downgrade. I can't. I'm not buying
Well, the style of receiver and the way, unfortunately, that Victor, you know, the routes he was running and he was certainly, his skill set at that point in time was not suited to those.
It's Ruben Randle.
Yeah.
He couldn't make an NFL team last year.
I know.
if you're going for Plaxico Burress, yeah, sure, I'd buy it. I can't talk about a big downgrade going for Ruben Randle and Victor Cruz.
And, of course, he said the lack of run game.
Right.
So
they didn't run the ball well the year before either.
Yeah, but on occasion, at least they had some spot running plays. I've always said this. It's you don't necessarily have to have a consistent running game, but
right.
you have to be able to pull it out in spots to keep people honest when you need to.
That's true.
And I thought they did a better job of that 2 years ago than they did last year. So those were his 4 points. I'm actually on board with all four of them. You could take three of the four if you like, but still, those are pretty significant reasons why there'd been a drop-off. I'm okay. You know, explaining it away that way. I don't know. Again, should there be a fifth reason and a sixth reason? I don't know.
I can't find the document. I wish I could. I have it back in my office. I can find
All right.
that for the show tomorrow. Let's go back to the calls and say what's up to Dre down in Atlanta. Dre, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, John?
How are you, Dre?
Hey.
John, you stole a little bit of my thunder, but there's one thing. And that Perkins' 16-yard run, it actually could have been a little bit longer, but Sterling Shepard got blown up on that play. And the safety pretty much just tossed him out the way and made the initial hit on Perkins on that run.
Okay.
Also, one of the runs on the screen pass to Sterling Shepard coming around the outside, the blocking on the outside wasn't there. So to go along with what you said, the wide receivers haven't really, you know, done their job in a run game. And one of the runs with Bisnawati got blown up, got pushed out the way, and the end made it. Pretty much what it is we have a mixed bag on both the first and second team. You know, you have Flowers who's shown improvement, who's doing his thing, but on the interior of the line with Pugh, Richburg, and Jerry, you know, their inconsistencies and consistently getting pushed back, whether it's the 3-4 sub scheme or the actual 3-4 defense being ran.
Right.
Then you have on the second team, you have Jones and you have Fluker that are really making a push, and you're getting inconsistencies from Wheeler and Bisnawati. So, I mean, I believe that they need to mix it up. You know, put Fluker. I would rather see Fluker in there as a guard, or either as a tackle next to Jerry, or flip flop, or put Fluker and Jerry next to each other. I mean, and Hart together, and see how that works. Because you know, we have two preseasons left before the season opener,
mm-hmm.
and I think I don't want to say to appease the crowd, but to be able to see what you have, what you can get in continuity within the next couple of weeks. Try it and see what you get. But I'm not going to hold the wide receivers that didn't block. I won't hold that against them since it was both there, Marshall's and Shepard's first game, first preseason action.
Yeah, I will add this to the equation, and I do think that this part of it is pretty much a given. Once you get to the regular season, you will see more of Red Ellison, and you will also see, obviously, a lot more of Brandon Marshall in the games. Well, guess what? Brandon Marshall is a very good run-blocking wide receiver on the edge. He is very good at it. And when the regular season gets around, he will think nothing of taking out a cornerback to seal the edge and help somebody run for yardage. And we know what Red Ellison can do. And he hasn't played exactly a ton during these preseason games. So just having those guys there should help some of the wide runs in terms of the blocking scheme get better. And that's simply going to be inherent with the regular season. So I do give that to you as a small ray of hope if you're willing to chew on it.
I am. And one last point. Out of all the runs I saw Paul Perkins, there was only one run I saw where he got caught in the backfield where he could actually make a move and made it to the outside. But outside of that, for all those that don't have faith in Paul Perkins or haven't seen his body of work, they need to see the anatomy of the tape that I always preach about where there's the breakdown on his vision and his skill set. Regular season, if you don't know what we have on the team, like I said before, look it up, find out some sound bites, or get a NFL Game Pass where you get the cut-ups, and you can actually zoom in, slow it down, and see what PDOT is talking about. Thanks for taking my call. Have a good one.
Appreciate it.
Got it.
Thanks, Dre.
Really anxious to see them get that running game going against the Jets, because that's a good front. A good front, John.
I would say try to get the running game going, because that is a really good front.
Okay.
I mean, you got Sheldon Richardson, you got Leonard Williams, you got Muhammad Wilkerson, and I guarantee, and I said this off the air to somebody earlier in the week, the Jet team's going to be into this game. They know how people are talking about it. It's going to be a rough year. Nobody thinks they're going to be any good.
And they're talking high about the Giants.
They're not going to like that.
No.
And they're going to come out of here, and they're going to try to make a statement. Whatever type of statement you can make in a preseason game, they're going to try to in this game against the Giants. And hopefully, you know, everything stays clean and nothing's extracurricular and all
right.
that stuff.
Right.
But I would not be surprised if the Jets came out and treated this very, very seriously.
Simply, though, because of that aspect that we're looking for, their rush defense against the Giants' sporadic run game, or certainly disappointing run game to this point, if the Giants can get that going, I don't want to hear afterwards, oh, they did it against the Jets. The Jets are not a good team.
Absolutely
I don't want
not.
To hear that.
No.
Okay? If they do run the ball well against this front, that's an accomplishment.
Sure. And I will say the motto and creed that I've said before. These games don't count, but they matter.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in the record, but what you do does reflect a lot of times what happens in the regular season. What happened in the preseason last year to the Giants offense, guess what? That's what happened in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't count, but they matter. Christian's in New York. He's up next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's up, Christian?
Hey, guys. I haven't called in since the preseason actually started, so
okay.
You know, a lot's been going on. Something I want to say about the run game.
Sure.
If they can't create any more offense for it in the next two preseason games, what I'm really hoping is that they're going to keep Sean Drone on the roster. Because, you know, Shane Vereen's 4-yard, 7-yard completions are basically going to be our run game this year. I mean, I feel like they'll, you know, really resort to that quite a bit if they have to. And, it seemed to work in other years. So I would really like Drone to be there, too, just to know that you really always have a receiving back that's going to be able to basically aid our run game through the air.
Well, the good thing, Christian, is that both Perkins and Gallman, while they aren't a quote-unquote receiving running backs or third-down scat backs, both of those guys are very capable of catching passes. They're not the route runner that Shane Vereen is, but you can use those guys in that role if you have to. But I personally like Sean Drone, to be honest with you. I think he's a pretty good, solid player. I think he's a great backup running back to have on your roster because he's so versatile. I'm just not sure you can find a spot on the roster for him given the challenges in other spots.
Yep.
And what a pleasant surprise Ereck Flowers has been.
I think in games,
really happy with him.
Well, Christian, in the games, I think he's been fine. He's had struggles in practice that are well documented, but in the games, he's been fine. Is he Tyron Smith? No. Has he killed the team? Has he gotten Eli murdered? Absolutely not.
And once again, I think the backup quarterback ran into a sack on his play. Not that Flowers totally did his job, but there was no reason that had to turn into a sack.
Agreed.
I agree with that.
And another thing, too, with Odell being hurt, I really hope that if he does miss any time that we don't really see too much of Sterling Shepard outside. You know, I feel like every time I've seen him line up outside in a game, players just don't really seem to respect any kind of speed he might have out there on the sideline.
Shepard?
Yeah. I mean, I watched D-backs kind of
Here's what happens.
Sit on his routes.
Here's what happens. It's not about his speed. It's about they believe they've got such a size and physical advantage over him that a lot of your corners on the outside are bigger. And so they don't fear his frame. It's not about his speed. It's about his frame. And they know that if they have to close on a 50-50 ball, chances are they're going to have a physical advantage over him, John.
Yeah, and they might also feel like the Giants might not throw the ball if he's outside, too.
That could be, too.
Yeah, I mean, I love Shepard in the slot. I just feel like it's kind of, really the thing he's able to do. I honestly feel like Shepard plays right to his size and not any bigger. I mean, that week one touchdown against Dallas, he absolutely played above his size, and I feel like that was a really rare occurrence last year.
Well, he really is best suited to be a slot receiver. I don't think anybody would argue that.
Agreed. Thank you, Christian.
Yeah, and all right, thanks.
Appreciate the call, man. 201-939-4513. Nick in the Meadowlands, he's up next. What's up, Nick?
Hey, John, how you doing?
Doing well, Nick. What's on your mind today?
Hey, Paulie, how you doing,
buddy?
Yeah, like yesterday, the guy wanted to switch around the line, Paul, and now this guy wants to move Shepard. Look what happened to Cruz. You were just talking about it.
Oh, no, Nick, Nick. Christian didn't want to move Shepard. He wanted to keep Shepard in the slot.
Oh, I misunderstood.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, Chris.
Yeah,
I think
I was
his point
say,
was
don't ever do that. He's a slot receiver. You
right.
Don't
his point, I think, was that he's not as effective when he's outside, and he was just trying to figure out why.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and,
that's like Cruz. Cruz, and you see, he's catching touchdowns for the Bears in preseason.
Had one the other night.
You know? Oh, did he? I missed that.
Had one the other night.
Good for Cruz.
Did the salsa.
Good for him.
Good for him.
Good for him. I knew they'd move him back inside. He would be himself again. You know, he's not as fast as he once was, but. He's still Victor Cruz, you know, still has hands, and that's why he caught some nice passes for us last year. He's just not an outside receiver.
Right.
You know. But yesterday, Paul, I was telling you yesterday with Fluker, I want to see them move him into the first team. I hope they do that this week. I want to see what happens there, you know. You know, the unknowns. That's what preseason's about, is the unknowns, right?
Yes. That is
true. Don't worry about all this, you know, records and all this stuff like that, like people are saying. Because I'm absolutely with you, Paul. You know, these fans that are spoiled, they're always gonna have something to say, whether they win or lose anyway. You know, they're gonna have something to say. You know?
But that's
they're
why
the greatest. They're the greatest thing since freaking. You know, if they win this week, oh my God!
But the good news is,
if they lose, you're never gonna hear the
end
of it.
Nick, the good news is, if fans didn't have anything to say, we wouldn't be here. So
exactly.
So I'm okay with that. I really am.
Hey, you guys have the greatest job. what was I going to say? On Beckham, I don't think that was such a dirty play at first. The emotions, you know, you're like, oh, no, this is what I hate about preseason. But when you go back and look at it, I think the guy really – was lining up to hit him waistline, you know, maybe, you know, somewhere in that range. But I think he lost his footing.
Well, Nick, and here's the thing. Here's
it
the,
looks like
Nick,
he slipped and he started
and
trying
Nick,
to catch his balance and
yeah,
he hit
and
him
Nick,
where he hit him.
And Nick, here's the thing, too. People say, oh, it's just a preseason game. That guy's playing for his NFL career that's tagging
exactly,
Odell Beckham Jr.
Yes.
Yo, this isn't
and
a preseason
Odell
game
Beckham
for that kid. He's trying to make the
catch.
Team.
And other guys, they won't go up for that catch. But Odell Beckham's a different breed, you know. But that guy, you got to be in his shoes.
Yeah.
He's trying to win a job, so he's going to go out there flying.
And guess what? I guarantee you when that guy goes into the meeting room with his coaches the next day, do you know what his coach is going to say? Good tackle.
Good. He's going to say – he's going to give him props. He's going to say, you know what?
Yeah.
You didn't let him score because you probably would have scored.
Exactly.
You know?
But I really don't think, and I don't know if some people do think this or not, I do not think Bobby Calhoun was trying to hurt anybody when he went to make that
No.
play.
I don't
At
think
first,
so either.
You know – But watch it over and over, and you guys did, and I did, and it looks like he lost his footing, and it's just he's still going to try to make the tackle. He's not going to just
and Nick, obviously, obviously, you would prefer that everybody tackles people, you know, around the waist and hits people in the chest. That's great, but guess what? Everyone's moving a million miles per hour, and you're not always going to hit the target you're trying to hit.
You're flying out there. You're like Landon Collins. You got a bunch of guys trying to be like Landon Collins.
Exactly. And by the way, like Landon Collins are in that game. Came up and tackled the tight end by the legs. Now, the tight end had turned around by then, but it's just a matter of seconds that can turn a harmless play into something that's a little bit more dangerous.
It could have been bad, though. I mean,
it could have been. And he's
bad.
Very lucky.
I mean,
Beckham's
you know
lucky, Nick.
McAdoo even said it. That's football.
Yeah, Beckham's lucky that his leg came out of the turf.
Something.
If that cleat stuck in that turf, we'd be talking about a season-ending injury. But you know what?
I mean,
those
ACL,
are the centimeters that change things.
His ankle could have – Blake could have snapped like Feisman. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank
but,
you, Nick. You got anything else?
One more thing, guys, about B.J. Goodson. Mm-hmm. He's looking really good, huh?
Yeah.
Here's the thing about Goodson, Nick.
Thumbs up.
And I think Goodson's been great going downhill. He's been great, you know, showing his showing his power, being a thumper. I want to see him handle some play action where he has to change direction and do a little bit more in coverage. Those are the two things where I don't think teams have tried to take advantage of his aggression quite yet. I want to see how he reacts to that. But I guarantee you, if it doesn't happen in the next two preseason games, the Cowboys run a million play action passes, a million. His discipline is going to get tested really, really tough in that first game against Dallas.
Just remember, okay, he is still virtually a rookie.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, doesn't it make you a little bit more optimistic and thinking like, wow, you know, from the first week until now, and we'll see, you know, this Saturday. I'm just looking at he looks comfortable.
I'm going to say this as simple as I can.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate the call, buddy.
Yep.
To this point, B.J. Goodson has passed every test with flying colors that they've thrown at him.
Absolutely.
For that reason, you should be hopeful and you should be optimistic.
Yes.
At the same time, if he does hit some stumbling blocks, you should not be overly upset about it because, after all, with his lack of experience, that should be expected. It should be par for the course if he does stumble on occasion and does make, quote, rookie mistakes. It's going to happen. But what you want out of him is that he doesn't repeat the same mistakes, if at all possible.
Correct.
And you would like to see him maintain his confidence and to continue to build his confidence so that if he does make some of these faux pas, he does not regress. That's all.
Let's go to Marco in Connecticut. He's up next. Hi, Marco.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing great, Marco. Good to hear from you. How are you?
Likewise. I'm doing great. John, congratulations on the birth of your daughter.
Thank you.
Everyone's doing well.
I've gotten two straight nights of 6+ hours in a row, so I'm doing great.
Yeah, enjoy that, man.
Yeah.
Enjoy it.
So far, she's treating us well. Knock on wood.
Excellent.
Good. And I love the name. I heard you shared it last week. That's a great name.
Thank you.
You know, very different and very nice.
Appreciate it.
Guys, a couple quick points. I haven't been on with you in a while, so I've kept track of some things that I wanted to share with you. Eric Flowers, you know, what he reminds me of a little bit, and in different positions, but I think I have a gut feeling, I think, that we're going to be talking about this someday. If you remember when Corey Webster was drafted, man, he was, although a second-round pick, he did not really live up to what the expectations were. But people really talked about him like a first-round pick, and because that was the missing first-round pick after Eli.
Yep.
So Webster really came on in that Super Bowl run. It was Aaron Ross and Sam Madison, but then Webster really burst on the scene and became a very, very solid player. Solid, I would say, to a very good corner.
Now, Marco, I will say one thing to say maybe you're not onto something. I think you make a good point that maybe you could be a late bloomer, but I think Webster, and I think Paul can attest to this better than I can, because he was here. I was not with the Giants when he first got here. The scheme he was put in at first was not very good to him.
Correct.
And when he got his second coach, he showed marked improvement fairly quickly. The problem we have with Flowers is that he's on to his second coach now for the second year, and maybe we haven't seen quite as much as progress as we'd like to see.
The other thing to take into account with Corey Webster is that he had a plethora of injuries early in his career. Now, Flowers did have a badly sprained ankle his whole rookie season and fought through that.
Correct.
And then during his first offseason, didn't do anything because he was busy trying to rest up that ankle to get ready for year number two.
But since then, he's been healthy.
Yes.
Okay.
But that certainly did throw him back some, and I think it's fair to say that.
Correct.
All right. And that's I understand that. He's on his second coach. I think though the spotlight is huge on him, and I understand because of the position he's playing. But you know, Corey was also on an island, and I could see some similarities down the road. But
you could be right.
If you want to make a point about Flowers in terms of development, he just turned 23 a short time ago.
Oh my God! Yeah, keep that in mind.
If you want to use that, you know, there are a lot of guys coming out who are already 22, and by their third year, they're 24, 25.
But all that being said, Marco, and I'll say, and Paul, I don't think Paul agrees with me in this, and please disagree if you do. No matter how old he is now, you know, this is third year in the league.
Got to play.
First round pick.
Got to play.
Got to play, and you got to play well. So far in the games, I think it's been okay. Is he where you want him to be? Probably not yet, but I think he's getting better. But let's see it continue in a quote-unquote dress rehearsal game against the Jets, and then when you get into the regular season, the jury is still very much out.
I will say this. It did take Jumbo Elliott a good 2 years before he really became a top-flight, first-level elite left tackle.
Now, back then, though, I think
– it was different in those days.
Yeah, guys took a little more time to
I understand that, but, you know, nobody comes ready-made out of the box these days.
Right.
No. All right, one thing about the defense, and then I have a sleeper player that I want to share with you guys of who I think is going to sneak onto the roster.
Sure.
Paul, you've been – I've heard you a couple times say this about the Giants' struggles with 3-4 defenses.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, but it got me thinking about something. Every day this offensive line, they line up against possibly one of the best defensive tackles in the league in Snacks Harrison.
Yes.
And Snacks came from a team with the Jets where – tell me if I'm wrong, guys. Did they play 3-4 where he was a nose tackle?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Does that not matter? I mean, does that not contribute to playing or practicing against a 3-4 type player?
Because they're playing 4-3 here.
Well, and the difference is that in the 3-4, Snacks would be lined up directly over Weston Richburg. In this lineup, he's lined up either on the guard or shading off to the side on the guard, which makes the center's responsibility a lot different depending on how you have the defense set up.
Yeah, the Giants, again, we mentioned this on yesterday's show. You know, it's great for this O-line to say we're going up against one of the best defensive lines in the game. That's great, but you know what? They are a 4-3.
Yes, and the last week against the Browns was a 4-3-2, by the way, and it was going to be a 3-4 now after you played a 3-4 against the Steelers in preseason game number one.
They did sub out a lot. Greg Williams did use a lot of 3-4 in there, but they are, what you say, multiple.
Right.
I know, but I think if I'm playing against Vernon or if I'm lined up against Harrison or if I'm lined up against JPP every day, I mean, there's got to be some improvement along the way. I mean,
you're right, but I don't think when you talk about 4-3, 3-4, I think the impact comes on the interior linemen rather than on the tackles. Because with the tackles, whether you're blocking a 4-3 defensive end or a 4-3, a 3-4 stand-up rusher, and by the way, those teams are a nickel a lot of the time anyway, so you're dealing with a guy with a hand in his dirt anyhow, so it's really not that big of a difference. I think the bigger impact with the different formations is on the two guards in the center rather than the offensive tackles, at least in my opinion.
And really, really, as I said yesterday, and I'll repeat it for those of you who didn't see the show, It's not just the 3-4, it's the 3-4 that has the oversized, gigantic King Kong nose tackle. That's where it's a bigger problem.
Well, that's giving Richburg some issues.
That's it.
Right.
That's it.
Right.
You know, a guy who's running 3-4, but they've got an average-sized nose tackle, you know, chances are Giants can handle that okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for addressing that, and I get it now with the 3-4 and the 4-3. Okay, I got a player. You could keep track if you want to. I'm sharing it with you. I have not heard. I've listened pretty much every day. I have not heard you guys mention this guy, so I'm curious what you think. A defensive player at a pretty stacked position that I think could sneak onto the roster is defensive end Jordan Williams. I like what I saw. I've been listening. His name has creeped up a little bit in some other areas that I've been looking at. And then I saw in the game the other night, he got in a little bit first quarter. And I seem to think that he's a guy that they wouldn't, because of his impact, I don't think they would be able to sneak him onto the practice squad. And I know he's at a loaded position, but I think he's going to find a way. And I would not be surprised if Devin Taylor possibly, or maybe Kerry Wynn, and I'm not counting Ola into that group, could be fighting with this kid because he's really put on some good tape lately. What do you think?
I'll buy that. I think Jordan Williams, in the limited playing time he's gotten, has shown up a little bit. Whether or not he can do enough to jump guys to make the roster, I think might be tough. I think he's a prime practice squad candidate. I think, Marco, you do identify a guy that has shown a little bit when he's been able to play. We got to run, Marco. Thank you.
Yeah, I just think the depth is too great at that position for him to make the 53. I just don't see it. But I agree with you. I think he's intriguing. And if he does wind up on the street, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody grabs him.
And by the way, we mentioned earlier how Valentino Blake was put on the reserved left squad list, which opened up a roster spot. Well, the Giants have filled that roster spot. They have signed defensive back Tim Scott. 5'11", 195 pounds. He was released on August 13th by the Redskins, who had signed him 10 days earlier. He was not on an NFL roster last year. He was a 2015 rookie free agent for the Cowboys, was on the practice squad of the Cowboys and the Browns in 2015. He went to the University of North Carolina, started 45 of 50 games there, so a lot of experience in college. Hasn't been able to really latch on so far in the National Football League. There you go.
Okay.
201-939-4513. Jeff in Rhode Island. How are you, Jeff?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Good to hear from you, buddy.
Hi.
I know. Well, I tune in every day, and let me offer my congratulations as well to you and your wife. It's a beautiful thing.
Thank you.
I hope everything goes very well for you.
So far, so good.
And, yeah, it's a good thing.
Yeah.
Paulie, maybe we need to call Willie Young and see what he's up to these days to help out the offensive line.
Oh, my goodness. And Doug Van Horn, too, right? You know what's funny about all of this? And,
yeah, I know.
And if we had a listening earpiece into every single NFL city around the country this week, I bet you 90% of them would be griping about their offensive lines.
I put it closer to 70%.
You think it's that low?
I think you have you have a half dozen teams that are happy with their offensive line right now. That's all you need.
Yeah.
All right.
So maybe it's 80%. but most of them, would be griping.
My question is, what are your impressions of Calvin Munson? How's he coming along?
Arrows up.
I think, depending on how the Giants want to organize their roster, and I do think there's going to be a lot of pressure that they keep a lot of defensive linemen simply because I think they have a lot of talented guys at that position, and I wonder how that's going to limit the number of linebackers they keep. Keenan Robinson and Mark Herzlich's health will have a big impact on the linebackers they keep as well. But Munson, Skinner, those guys have made some plays. And if you want to know more about them, by the way, we did some interviews with them. They'll be on Giants Training Camp Live on MSG tonight at 6 o'clock. So make sure you tune into that. I think they have shown up a little bit, Jeff. So I think those guys are worth watching. And I think the last preseason game is huge for those guys. Because my guess is that Jonathan Casillas, you're probably not going to see out there in that last preseason game. So those two guys will have a great opportunity to show the coaches what they can do.
Yeah, I would only add that 2 weeks ago, I wasn't so sure that either one of them could make it.
Agreed.
Right now, I'm going to tell you, I think Munson's on the 53.
I'm with Paul 100%, though I'm not sure if he's on the 53 or not.
Okay.
It seems like he's doing pretty well on his specials, so that should help him out for sure.
And by the way, Jeff, I will say this. I did interview Tom Quinn earlier in the week, and he, by name, mentioned Munson as one of the guys that have jumped out on specials. So you are right about that, absolutely.
Okay. Well, being a Yankee fan, I love his last name as well. So,
I get it.
You guys have a good day, okay?
Thank you, Jeff. And the Yankees have had two easy wins against the Detroit Tigers.
Thank goodness.
Looks like, dude, by the way, Gary Sanchez likes August, huh?
Holy
2 years in a row now. Man. All right, let's go to Andrew, New Jersey. He'll wrap us up. What's up, Andrew?
Hey, congratulations to you.
Thanks, Andrew.
And also, congratulations, Andrew Sr. He's celebrating 60 years today.
Nice.
Married. That goes all the way back to Y.A. Tittle and Frank Gifford, maybe even before then.
Paul's actually celebrating his 60th wedding anniversary next week, so it's exciting.
Congrats.
But I wanted to ask you guys about Geno Smith, but I was saying I'm loving what I'm seeing with the defense. And you mentioned Herzlich at tight end. Olivier Vernon at safety, and DRC at linebacker. So that was sweet seeing DRC.
You've gone a little crazy now with these position switches, but it certainly has been wild to watch.
And I'll tell you what, if in a couple years, Andrew, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie wants to play a little bit of safety, I'll tell you what, he could have Ed Reed-esque instincts back there in terms of going after passes and getting picks. That's how good he is at reading quarterbacks.
And you're right, he's tall and long arms, athletic, so he has the physique for it.
No question.
And,
I'm not sure if he come up and tackle like Ed Reed, but he might be able to go after the ball like Ed Reed.
And just quick on the Beckham hit, the only person that knows if it was dirty is the defensive guy, because he did spear him in the knee, but you don't know if he intentionally. And, so he's really the only one knows, was it? It's not a dirty hit, by the standards, but if the guy, chose to spear him in the knee instead of the wave. But no one knows that, and he, if he did, he's not going to admit to it.
What do you want
to
say about Geno Smith, Andrew?
The main thing, Beckham's okay, so that's what's most important. But I want to ask you guys, Geno Smith, I'm liking what I'm seeing, and he does have some experience now. And I think because of the knee injury, speaking of knees, they say it takes 2 years to come back, so maybe he's trying to stay in the pocket more. But he looks really good. Great, you know, like footwork in the pocket, good arm. He throws with touch, not just gunning. You know, he can throw hard. I'm not saying he's going to be the future of the franchise when Eli retires, but I'm definitely, you know, like what I'm seeing. So your thoughts on Geno Smith and what happened to Nassib? Why did that fall through? Thanks, guys.
Hey, appreciate it, Andrew. Good call.
Nassib is on the back end of the Saints depth chart. In fact, he played in the fourth quarter the other day.
He had an elbow injury, by the way, last year. One of the reasons why he took a long time catching on somewhere.
Geno Smith, you know, has a terrific arm, and anybody who says otherwise hasn't seen him throw.
And he can move the ball. He actually places the ball well, too. He looks accurate. But.
At times.
But.
There are other times where you just shake your head and don't want to look.
Two words. Decision making. McAdoo called the first interception a blind throw. It was clear the interception of the day. He got panicky when the rush came. He thought a guy was open. Did not really look and identify the defender before he threw the ball near the goal line, and that got picked too. Can he eliminate those big mistakes? That's the deal with Geno Smith.
Coach was asked the other day, do you take turnovers personally? And he said yes.
And how mad was he in that post-game presser after the game on Monday night?
He's
furious.
I said this after game one. For Geno Smith to grab a hold of that number two job, he was going to have to show me three clean preseason games coming up. Well, he didn't do it.
0-2. Couple tweets real fast before we say goodbye. I know we're 2 minutes past. A couple people want to see Davis Webb get more run with either the ones or the twos. I'm fine with that. See how he does. I'm all good. Couple people about the O-line. And a couple people saying it's not just Flowers. It's the inside of the O-line, too. Considering how the running game went, it's not just Flowers. They're absolutely right. It is the inside of the offensive line as well. There's no question about that.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, guys, we're not telling you that you should not criticize the offensive line. They need to do better. But we're just simply talking about the reasons why. We're not making excuses. And just talking about how you get things fixed. And if you can get things fixed. Or if this is kind of what they're going to have to deal with the current roster.
Mm-hmm.
And that's most of the big stuff here. And we appreciate it, guys. Excellent job on the phones. Paul, good stuff as always. We'll be back with you tomorrow on Giants.com for a full preview of Giants and Jets. And by the way, next week, Big Blue Kickoff Live will return to his usual time at noon, but one more show at 10 tomorrow, so make sure you stay tuned to Giants.com. We'll have coverage of training camp practice, which will get going a few minutes outside right here at the Quest Diagnostics Training Center. For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelk. We'll see you next time, everybody. Have a good one.